We kicked off another big week of shows on Monday, February 24th. More talk about possibly legalizing recreational marijuana here in Connecticut. The Reverend Carl McCluster of the Shiloh Baptist Church in Bridgeport stopped by to give us his opinion on that. And in the 4 p.m. hour, more political analysis of the Nevada caucuses and what's ahead for Super Tuesday and the South Carolina primary from Dr. Gary Rose. He chairs the political science department at Sacred Heart University in Fairfield. About this time last year, we were talking about possibly legalizing recreational marijuana in this state. Now, we've had medical pot for several years. I think there's about 35,000 people that have medical marijuana cards. Marijuana has been decriminalized from what it used to be. You basically get a ticket or a summons if you have just a small amount. The next step, though, would be to do what Massachusetts has done and New York is thinking about and other states, to just set up these dispensaries and let people buy for recreational use. A lot of folks are not on board with that, and there's been a battle going on, literally, rhetorically, with influence here in a lot of the inner cities in Connecticut, the urban areas, including Bridgeport. And a gentleman joining me in the studio right now is one of those who are saying, hey, time out on this. This is not necessarily a good thing. They think the Reverend Carl McCluster, who joined us last year, joins us again from the Shiloh Baptist Church. Reverend, how are you, sir?
Great, Paul. Thanks for having me. Appreciate being here.
And thank you for coming in. You know, I am hearing through my contacts at the Capitol. In fact, there were some articles, I don't know whether you saw them over the weekend, that the recreational pot thing may not fly again this year. There's kind of some squishy votes on both sides here. What are you hearing on this?
Well, we know that it's not going to work. It's not going to pass. There's been some bludgeoning going on, bloodletting going on in Hartford as legislators have been forced, to the point to either get on board or lose things. When you start to threaten legislators with losing funding for the projects that they're working on, like children's projects and other sort of things that are needed in the community, because you won't get on board, then that's the sort of politic that we don't need in Connecticut.
There is, Reverend, a not too veiled difference of opinion in many people in the inner city, legislators, spiritual leaders like yourself. There is quite a diametrically opposed version or vision, rather, as to whether or not this belongs in Connecticut, with the interest that you folks have in fact, you know, some of the urban areas and inner cities like Bridgeport.
Well, so if you talk about the inner cities bear the weight of it. I'm going to declare right now we need to stop holding folks hostage. In other words, I want the folks that are pro-marijuana legalization to stop holding the people that they say they're going to expunge the records for. So now we're told that we will expunge the records if you legalize marijuana.
Why not do it just beforehand?
If it's right to do it, let's do it. Why are we going to hold these folks hostage for that? We're told that, well, part of the money is going to be used, as much as 25%, to fix the problems that are created by legalizing it. In other words, the addictions and things like that. If you look at statistics in Washington State, Colorado, I went to undergraduate school at Colorado College.
I remember you telling me, yeah.
Ooh, Colorado Springs. and Dan May, who happens to be the district attorney there, has a set of facts that he's put out there. And just the facts, man, just the facts, right? Well, you know, there's been an increase of murders in Colorado Springs since legalization of marijuana. And since if some people think that doesn't matter, it's many of these murders are tied directly to the sale of pot. The black market has increased in Colorado. It doesn't go away, just like the black market in alcohol doesn't go away. You can still find a place to buy a beer or a bottle of liquor after hours.
And avoid the taxes.
Right. There you go. Thank you very much. Off of somebody's car, off of somebody's wagon, whatever it is. So these things don't go away. So this joke, this illusory thought that all the black market stuff is going to go away if you legalize it. No, it's going to increase, as a matter of fact.
Are there people, Reverend, telling you, come on, man, just pipe down with it. We need the money. Just our community has been wronged by this. Let's just get on board with this. Are you hearing that?
Not from reasonable people. I hear from people who are trying to gain the favor of people in an administration that wants to do that, not face the hard challenges that this state has to face in terms of its fiscal accountability and responsibility. I consider myself as an independent, so Democrats, Republicans, sorry about it, but I'm an independent, going to stay an independent, been one for 30-something years, and I think that we can be fiscally responsible without selling our souls and our children's lives. I mean, that's the problem here. How many of you are going to go home today and say, hey, kids, let's pull out some weed and smoke a couple of joints? This feigned divide within the faith community. Come on, that's a selling point for someone.
Does that not exist? Are there more people in the faith community against this or for this? Give me your honest, your honest look at this.
Well, let me say this. It's absolutely clear that there are more people in the faith community against it than for it. As someone who smoked pot myself, who unwittingly gave some of my life to smoking weed, I consider myself to be 20% less effective or less where I should be than if I had smoked pot. And this is a guy who went to undergraduate school, has a graduate degree, went to Yale School of Management. But one day I was sitting there high at SOM, and as I walked out of there, the Lord reminded me. I felt sort of stupid. I said, I'm spending at that time $12,000. Now it's $35,000 to go to school. And the Lord showed me, you'll never be the person that you're supposed to be as long as you give yourself over to these drugs. And so I went to my room, I prayed, and I haven't used drugs since, thank God. That's 30-something years ago. My experience is not unique to the underperformance of people. If you look at the school scores that are coming out of Colorado and coming out of Washington State, you see that there's an inhibited performance for people that use marijuana. It stays in your system long enough so that for as many as 30 days, your academic performance is hindered or limited because you use marijuana. And almost every person who takes a harder drug, Dan May, again, the district attorney in the 4th District in Colorado Springs, says started on marijuana. The increase in illegal marijuana operations since 2014 have increased despite it now being legal. In other words, more drug lords, more mafia people, more people in the black market come to a place where it's legal. Because that's a gateway in. You can get in because it's legal.
To the harder stuff.
For the harder stuff and for marijuana and for different forms of marijuana. We talk about the opioid crisis now, right? What happens is as soon as we get some sort of fix for that, and thanks to Chris Murphy and to William Tong for doing a lot of work, Dick Blumenthal, all these guys that are working hard. We're in Washington talking about this. And the challenge is that as soon as one thing gets... there's a remedy or a treatment, then the next thing morphs up. And they're morphing up and they're changing as soon as something
is... Well, look at fentanyl.
There you go. There's the answer right there, cocaine and fentanyl. Yeah. You know, what's the answer for that? And as soon as we get an answer, there'll be another drug. So if we think that this is going to go away because we make it legal, we're just fooling ourselves. The record proves in other places where it's legal that it increases the illegal use of the drug, it increases the black market, it increases crime. And anybody listening now that wants more criminals in their district, just vote yes on marijuana.
The Reverend Carl McCluster is the guest. We'll be back with him after traffic and weather together on the sixes here, 3:46 on WICC. As we spend a few more minutes here up to the top of the hour with the Reverend Carl McCluster of the Shiloh Baptist Church in Bridgeport, Reverend McCluster on the front lines here. He is one of the members of the faith community who is not on board with legal recreational marijuana here in Connecticut. And as we've said, as I've said on this show, medical marijuana, that's one thing. Recreational pot is what people are debating here. And something you and I were just discussing, Reverend, off mic here, and I've had experts on from all over the country on this. The weed, Reverend, that you and I partook of when we were much younger guys, apparently what I'm told is nothing like the commercial-grade marijuana that would be grown here as far as the THC content.
Sure. The the agricultural industry does a great job in increasing the potency and the effectiveness of many good things, but also it works on the bad side, too.
Yeah.
And so the stuff that we were smoking when I was a teenager pales in comparison to what's out there now. My son has a medical marijuana card and had T-cell lymphoma. But he challenged me and said, Dad, you don't know what we're smoking now. So I think that's one of the challenges. Look, regular use of marijuana impairs learning, memory, math, and reading achievement even 28 days after use. What about that? Mm-hmm. So, it's out. I can work it out. I can sweat it out like I do a drink. No, you can't.
Reverend, let me stop you there. What about the people who say to you, look, man, New York's going to have it pretty soon. Massachusetts is going to have it pretty soon. Who knows what Rhode Island's going to do? So, come on, we just got to get with it. What's your answer to
that? Well, my kids used to tell me that all the time. Everybody's doing it, Dad. So I asked the question, if everybody was jumping off
the
cliff, would you be jumping off a cliff?
It's a standard parent answer, isn't
it? Right, it is. But it's a logical sense. And look at the whole story of what's happening in those states. Again, I go to the facts, just the facts, man. Where's Jack when we need him? So I'm going to read this one line. Washington drivers involved in fatal crashes who tested positive for marijuana increased from 9% in the five-year period prior to legalization to around 18% in the five-year period after legalization. What's more, the study found that about one in five drivers involved in fatal crashes in 2017 tested positive for marijuana. So, you know, when people come into an urban center, and I remember when Tom Sweeney was the chief, lived next door to me, we used to talk every day, and we blocked off the streets in East End of Bridgeport to stop folks from driving in and running out. Well, you know, folks out in the suburbs, get ready, because folks that are driving into Bridgeport picking up their THC-laced marijuana are going to drive back out to the suburbs, and when they drive back out to the suburbs, then the increase in traffic, I hate to say it, but that's what the stats say, fatalities will increase in our suburbs because of what's happening and what's being allowed to happen.
I had a radio friend of mine years ago, Reverend, who, for a little in-depth series, he took a recorder and he actually sat down and talked on, you know, on a street corner or on a bench with drug dealers in New Haven. And the first thing they said was, and I'm paraphrasing, first thing they said, man, 90% of our customers are white people from the suburbs.
Right.
And he goes, they come in to buy, they spend their money here, and then they scoot back to their nice little suburban area.
Right. And the murders that occur, the killings that occur very close normally to the place where the selling is going on.
Mm-hmm.
So we have increased legalization, which means increased traffic into the legal areas to pick it up and drive back out. And we have increased crime in the areas where it's being sold. As competition increases, you know, that's what drug dealers do. They fight it out on the corners.
So you don't buy the line that we're hearing, that, but this is going to be legal dispensaries here. We're going to put the drug dealers out of business. What do you say to that?
Well, the facts don't show that to be true. There's an increase in illegal production, especially when we start talking about morphing and fixing marijuana, right? Mm-hmm. Because when I was a kid, they had this thing called KJ in California, which was a marijuana cigarette laced with some sort of drug. I don't even know what that drug is, but I know what it was. It knocked folks out. And now, as we see the challenges that we face with other sorts of drugs, to get more customers, black market that's grown, and the legal market, I argue, will also add different types of drugs to it.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that what happened with vaping? Let's just create something different. Let's add some more of this to it and more of that
to it. Well, all these kids that are ending up in the hospital, it's not the strawberry-flavored cartridges. It's the THC cartridges.
Right, and the difference is going to be, instead of the hospital, we're going to have kids ending up in the graveyard. Mm-hmm. And as a pastor, I'm tired of going to the graveyard because someone got shot, because someone OD'd, and every parent ought to rise up. Every law-abiding citizen ought to rise up. There's a reason that the American Medical Association says no. There's a reason that our police, our law enforcement, not a single division of law enforcement is saying yes. These are people that we count on in the case of emergency, and I join those voices in saying, just say no. Call Nancy to the stand.
No.
Just say no.
That's right. Reverend, thank you. Final question here as we're out of time.
Sure.
If you had to, maybe you're not a betting man, if you had a wager, would you think this is dead again this year, or do you think that some legislators will still turn the screws on this? What do you think?
I'm just asking everyone to join us in killing it. It needs to die, because if it doesn't die, our kids will. Our inner cities will, from this drug war that will be revitalized by this legalization. And we see it in other – look, if you're seeing increased, you know, murders, increased crime related to drugs in Colorado, then what do you think is going to happen in the inner cities of Connecticut? I leave that to you to decide.
Reverend Carl McCluster from the Shiloh Baptist Church of Bridgeport. Reverend, thank you. We'll be in touch.
Paul, thank you so much, and keep on keeping on.
I'll try. Thank you. Guys, who we go to for all things political, Dr. Gary Rose, chair of the Poli-Sci Department at Sacred Heart University in Fairfield. Gary, I'm guessing that there might be some people wincing about this.
Yes, I think many people are wincing, sure. Well, he raised the literacy rate in Cuba, so I guess that's somehow we're supposed to forgive all of the human atrocities associated with Fidel Castro.
Yeah, it is. Look, Gary, you and I both know that if he, and we'll talk about whether he has a shot for this or not, but, you know, what they call, you and I know, is called opposition research, oppo research. I mean, I would think the president's campaign has to be salivating over this.
Oh, my God. They're going to have a field day if Bernie Sanders is the nominee. You know, by the time that that election day rolls around, Bernie Sanders is going to be so defined by the Trump campaign that defined not just as a socialist, but most likely, I'm not kidding, they'll define him as a communist. And I think it's going to be a really, really tough hole for Bernie to dig himself out of. I really see that coming.
What did you think of what happened, Gary Rose, in Nevada? Kind of what everybody was predicting for the few weeks leading up to it.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I thought there was a surprise there, I would say, somewhat, is that the Culinary Union in the end actually seems to have supported Bernie, and they have a great insurance plan with their unions. And so many were thinking that maybe they would go with Biden because of the union insurance plan, which if Bernie is elected and if he gets his way, of course, with Congress, then the unions would lose those really good insurance plans they have if they went to Medicare for All. But nevertheless, in terms of the actual contest itself, no big surprise, because it really is, as we say, it's a very multicultural state. And Sanders, other than African-American voters, although even his support there has been rising, but among Hispanics and others who are in Nevada now, a lot of liberal young people also living in the Las Vegas area, it's not at all surprising that he dominated in Nevada. And then, you know, we also have to realize coming out of New Hampshire with a very strong showing. Well, I can't say very strong showing, but as a very respectable showing. And he did come in first in New Hampshire, but it wasn't as much as people expected. He does have the momentum. And so moving into the Nevada caucus, I think that momentum from New Hampshire, especially more so than Iowa, carried him into that caucus quite well.
Gary, hang on. Dr. Gary Rose is our guest, chairman of the Poli-Sci Department at Sacred Heart University, talking about Bernie Sanders. And now what's ahead, coming up with a debate tomorrow night, primary on Saturday, and Super Tuesday straight ahead. More with Gary straight ahead. Traffic and weather together on the sixes here. 4:36, it's a Monday at WICC. And we're at 4:38, coming up to 4:39, 21 before 5 o'clock. More with Dr. Gary Rose, Sacred Heart University Poli-Sci Chairman. Gary, it was interesting after Sanders claimed victory that Pete Buttigieg came out and really tried to put the screws to Bernie Sanders, and then Buttigieg ends up getting attacked by people like Bill de Blasio and the far left of the party. Were you surprised that Buttigieg came out and again tried to sound the alarm here or not?
No, not at all surprised. You know, someone is going to have to coalesce around one of the candidates that is regarded as a moderate, although I have some I have some problem with describing some of these people as moderates. But nevertheless, and I think that's exactly what Pete Buttigieg's strategy is he's trying to really present a picture of Sanders as someone who cannot beat Donald Trump, and that he is the one who can do it. And there's a possibility there that, you know, that he could, and in fact, one of those moderates possibly could. And so what he's trying to do really is, well, he's challenging some of the results. I know that. He's telling people that Bernie Sanders is simply not going to win the general election. And I think Buttigieg's strategy, and he's trying to hang on, certainly, is to rally people to his candidacy, the moderates in particular, you know, hoping that they drop their support, the moderate voters, for like Biden and maybe Klobuchar, and rally behind him, and then present him as the real moderate alternative to Bernie Sanders. And I can tell you, you know, it's going to be very, very difficult for any moderate to take Sanders on unless those moderates do, you know, some of them start to drop out. And like I said, I hope, and if they coalesce around a particular candidate, that's the only way they can really stop Sanders. But otherwise, Sanders is going to just keep steamrolling.
Why is Elizabeth Warren still in this? Could she be gone after this coming Saturday?
Yeah, I don't see a real bright future for her. Her support has been dwindling. It's moving towards Sanders in, a pretty decisive way. And even though she claims she's still on a roll, she's not. And she didn't do it well in Nevada, and she didn't do well in the first two caucuses or the first two contests either. And she's not going to do well in South Carolina. I think her days are definitely numbered. You know, a lot of the far left progressive Democrats saw in Elizabeth Warren a champion, but then as Bernie really became the more progressive and more authentic candidate, they started to really move over to his camp. And so Warren, I can't predict exactly, but I'm inclined to say she's going to be gone within 2 weeks. I might be wrong on that, but I don't see her around much longer.
Gary, this might be political junk food for guys like you and I. However, a story bubbled up over the weekend that Michael Bloomberg is working and his people are working the superdelegates already. You know, they're hoping for what could happen. You and I have talked about this. We've salivated over this, a brokered convention. And then he would team up with Hillary Clinton. Here she is. She never goes away. And, you know, Gary, as crazy as it sounds, I wouldn't discount anything.
I don't discount anything anymore. Donald Trump won the presidency. Who would have thought, right, that Donald Trump would be the president of the United States? And I would not at all be surprised if already, you know, this whole scenario of a Bloomberg-Hillary ticket, it sounds far-fetched, but I don't discount it at all.
No.
And I would not at all be surprised if when we get to the convention, if Bernie Sanders doesn't have a majority for the first ballot, that maybe on the second ballot that ticket actually emerges.
Now,
there's a possibility.
Because Gary, right, the superdelegates could just figuratively, they could kill him on the second ballot if they want to, right?
Oh, yeah. There's well over 700 of them, and that's a big number. And actually, Bloomberg could go into this convention running second, and he might, because he's got the resources to go the long distance on this, all the way to the convention, and he's going to be winning delegates, and he's not competing in the first four, but he is starting to compete certainly on March 3rd, which is a huge day with 14 primaries and a lot of delegates at stake, and we're going to have 38% of the delegates chosen after March 3rd. Bloomberg will have a share of those, and he can go into this convention possibly running second. And so, strategizing on the second ballot and picking a running mate at that point, announcing, maybe waiting to the convention to announce, you know, that Hillary is joining him, that could actually be very formidable and could possibly derail Sanders. I think I agree with you, Paul. Anything is possible.
Yeah, and it really is a roll of the dice, Gary, because you and I both know, you know, going with Bloomberg and Hillary or Bloomberg and whomever and mm-hmm. putting a shank in, you know, in the neck of Bernie politically, that, you know, they are taking a big chance of ticking off Bernie's base to where they might stay home.
Well, you know, that's another matter, too. Yeah. Those are really ideologically passionate people, and they believe in Bernie almost as if he's got all the answers to their life. You know, I was talking to a Bernie supporter the other day.
Yeah.
And she said, you know, oh, he's going to take care of my college debt. I'm going to get free health care. I'm going to get all these things. And, you know, and they believe so much in him that if in fact he's denied the nomination, there's no way that those people are going to vote for a Michael Bloomberg or probably not one of the other moderate candidates either.
And in that respect, Gary, Bernie Sanders is very much like President Trump. I mean, we're seeing more and more of that. A lot of people are starting to realize this, that, you know, they both kind of tap into the same thing here.
Yeah, well, they're both populist candidates. They both, you know, rail against the system, which they feel is rigged and unfair. Different views on that a little bit, of course, but nevertheless, there is certainly some common ground there in terms of people who are really frustrated and who feel that the system has cheated them, and they're tapping into that vein very effectively, both of them.
Gary, finally, I had a chuckle over the weekend, and come on, you and I love this stuff. Watching people like James Carville and Chris Matthews, and I thought Matthews may have gone a tad overboard, you know, using the example of France falling to the Nazis in 1940. That was a tad much, but man, the establishment people, they're frustrated, they're angry, they're really looking like they're on suicide watch.
Yeah, they really are worried. And quite frankly, I mean, if you take a look at the way, you know, this Sanders juggernaut is moving, they have every reason to be worried because, again, Bernie is clearly right now the front runner. This could stop after South Carolina. The whole race could be reset again if Biden does well in South Carolina and then March 3rd with Bloomberg. But nevertheless, I think the establishment really feels that, good God, not only, you know, could the Democrats be nominating a socialist as, you know, as their candidate, but what could also happen to the down ticket with him at the top? They're worried not just about the presidency. The establishment is worried about the House, and they're certainly worried about the Senate too. Even though the Republicans control the Senate now, who knows what's going to happen if you have a socialist, despite the fact that he claims he's a Democratic socialist, which by the time the election rolls around, he'll be painted as a communist, you know, at the top of the ticket. Of course, they have every reason to be worried about this.
He'll be a buddy with Chairman Mao and Paul Pot, right?
Oh, you're going to see a hammer and sickle all over this guy. Absolutely. Sure.
Gary, stock up on the popcorn, the pork rinds, the beef jerky, and I'll talk to you next week after Super Tuesday. How's that?
Okay, Paul.
Thanks,
good.
Gary. Appreciate it. Bye-bye. Okay.